So you've been able to describe the complexity of every scenario, and as you mentioned, everyone's had a very different experience. The more open we are when we address this or talk about sexuality, one day we'll be able to just be at ease. We don't even have to talk about it anymore. But what would be the considerations within the peer-based learning environment when you have the schools providing that side of conflict where there are some jokes, inappropriate jokes? Do your workshops allow for some resilience to combat that or counter attack some of the teasing or the jokes?
Absolutely. So I'll give you an example. In the first week of our Start Making Sense workshop, we do an activity at the very end of the first day, and that's where we break the guys up into two groups and we get them to write what are some things that need to change in society to make it better, and what are some of the good things about being same-sex attracted or being LGBTQI. So in doing that, we actually go, well, it's actually pretty good being who we are. What are those things? What do they look like? And we get the guys to break those down and to actually start to think about the positive things in life. And I guess that's where we start to build the resilience to those stereotypes that they've learned throughout school.
I often find that a number of my work colleagues and friends who are queer tend to be a lot more resilient, a lot more critical, but also confident. They've obviously built themselves up and worked on their own, let's say, personal development. So they've become one of the most successful, most focused, ambitious people because they're so strong in their identity. They've had to work on themselves and form who they were, and they understand who they are. So there's a lot of things to celebrate in terms of these workshops and events, and I think there's a lot of positive things that have been happening. How could we address that if we were a parent or, let's say, a teacher or a friend? So when we see someone go through this coming out phase, and it could be self-destructive behavior or it could be something else, but what can we do to cushion the blow or to make it a positive experience?
So I think this goes back to creating safe spaces as well within like a coming out environment. So I think that if young people are kind of feeling really ostracized or misunderstood by their family or their friends, they're much less likely to want to kind of engage with these people when it comes to these discussions around things like mental health and ask kind of really pertinent questions related to their health or well-being or behaviors. And are much less likely, therefore, to like seek help if they need it. So I think that it is really important that as parents or friends that we kind of work to educate ourselves on the issues that young people who are coming out might be experiencing. And that can, you know, there are so many resources out there, you know, at ACON or PFLAG, which is specifically for parents and friends and family of young people who might be coming out. So yeah, it's really important just to foster those safe spaces, those non-judgmental, non-condescending spaces where people can reach out if they need it, if they're experiencing mental health issues or they're, you know, struggling a little bit in a certain area. They're not going to want to reach out if they feel like they're going to be judged or rejected or ridiculed straight away.
And sometimes I feel that it could be, let's say, the parents who may need counselling more than the actual subject or the teenager. Okay, it is really interesting. Okay, so and it's also something that social media has been quite successful with to provide that safe space. They have a way of counter attacking some of the traditional norms of sexuality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So young people nowadays are accessing obvious like more information than ever before online, and that's presenting a lot of challenges in our work, but also a lot of opportunities.
I suppose, in response to what society expects of them. So there's bisexuality, there's pansexuality, there's asexuality.
We do have people who kind of reject that binary male-female attractive attraction. But, yeah, I think the important thing for us in our work and for everyone really is just understanding that it is more than just gay and straight and bisexual, and there are a range of ways that people experience and express their sexuality.
Yeah, but also that, like, sex is fun, and who, if you want to have sex with different people, that's fine.
Yeah.
Go for it. So long as it's consensual and, you know, the latest strategies to stay safe, then have at it, basically.
So let's say they understand the risks that they're putting themselves under. They have a very mature approach, however, they are much more empowered because they know how to have safe sex, as opposed to heterosexual people who assume a lot of things. And in the end, they put in more risks. Anyway, this is a different topic. Okay. All right.
My personal opinion is that the queer community is one of the most responsible, informed groups of people when it comes to sexual health.
I would completely agree with you.
That's largely, I think, because of the history of, things like HIV and things where we really did have to make a very,
come together as a community
and make a very deliberate effort to educate ourselves about the issue
and to look after each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. And lucky for Australians, they do have that informed process. We've been able to provide that. And these are the types, I would say. I don't know how you classify these people because I'm not the specialist, but with the closeted behaviours, so the ones that might be feeling internal conflict, who don't want to come out in the open, they are the ones at risk, I would say, more at risk of mental health problems than others who are more open. Would you agree with that? I mean, how would you address that?
I would say that, for some people, there's definitely an element of kind of, and it goes back to this internalized homophobia and shame, perhaps, around their sexual feelings. And I think that they are one of the hardest groups to kind of engage with because in terms of, educating them about things like HIV prevention strategies and things like that. So they are definitely a difficult or interesting group that we need to really make more of an effort to engage with. But having said that as well, I think that there are certain people who do engage in that kind of discreet behaviour and they are still very informed about, sexual health and things like that.
I'd also just say too that we're talking about bi people or bi curious people. Some of the challenges we face in terms of reaching them is discrimination towards bi people from the gay community, for instance. So that's something that I guess our community needs to address, and that's this idea of, oh, you're not really bi, are you? Exactly. So I think within the gay community there needs to be an understanding that, no, that's not just a phase, that this is how that person expresses their sexuality. They are attracted to men and women, and that's fine. And that's someone we should be welcoming into the gay community. I find within the queer community that tends to be a bit more fine because there's an understanding of, I guess, different sexualities and being attracted to more than just male, female, or male, male, so on.
I think just understanding that everyone's, you kind of touched on this, but understanding that everyone's coming out process is going to be very different and kind of accepting that people are coming from diverse backgrounds, experiences, and that we shouldn't really ever assume anything about anyone's experience.
Yeah. what we talked about earlier, don't imagine someone in one particular way. Think of someone and their future in multiple ways. That allows you to then, I guess, be more accepting. Because when that person comes up to you and says, oh, I'm attracted to guys, or I'm bi, or whatever, it's not a shock. And you've spent that time actually, I guess, processing your thoughts around that before you've had that conversation.